Okay, so we are, today is December 21st, 2016, Chafal of Kislev, Rehalach Day of Perek Tesvav. The truth is there's a nice selection of possibilities for what to do over the course of this Perek, but we just kind of fell into one, and that is the pasuk towards the end, after the Shira. So the pasuk says they came to Marasa, they couldn't drink water, and then everybody complains, and they call out to Hashem, they put this eitz into the water, the water became sweet. Sham sam lo, choku mishpat v'sham niso. That is where they placed their chok umishpat. So what is that referring to, the chok and the mishpat, the law and the... the law and the law. So Rashi says that's referring to a couple of specific mitzvos. Rashi says, where is it? Where's that Rashi go? Oh, there it is. So Rashi says, "B'mara nasim ha mixas parshios shel Torah." That in Mara, in this place already, he gave them a few of the mitzvahs of the Torah. She asked them that they all involved with them, and what were they? So Shabbos, paraduma, v'dinim. That's what it says in Rashi. Shabbos, paraduma, and dinim, meaning judging civil laws. So where do we get that concept from? Where is that possibility brought up? So that we say chok shamsam lo chok. A chok is referring to chukas, mishpat are the laws. So that's referring to Shabbos. So that's a little bit of an odd thing. Paraduma, of all things you're going to give over, you're going to give over paraduma. So in the Torah Tamima here, he says that he thinks that the pei aleph, it's not really supposed to be paraduma, but it's actually a toh sofer. What is a toh sofer? Toh sofer. A toh is a mistake. Sofer of the printer. There's a printer's error here, and it's not supposed to be paraduma, but it's supposed to be kivud av. How do you get from paraduma to kivud av? Not so hard. But what's the if you take the Rosh Tevos, the acronym of paraduma, it's pei aleph, right? A pei, it looks a lot like a chaf. So it might have been supposed to spell that as chaf aleph to spell out kivud av, and instead it put in pei aleph paraduma. Now the Torah Tanina says there is a little bit of a problem because the Ramban in his quotation of Rashi, he already quotes it as saying paraduma. So that's already that's a problem. I mean that's a pretty short amount of time in order for a printer's error to take root. I mean, it has to be a printer's error needs to like take root for these things to happen. But anyways, the Torah Tanina makes that suggestion, but then you still have the same question. Okay, so why Shabbos and why Kivud Av? So the Torah Tamima suggests that if you look at the second Lukos, when the Aseres HaDibros are given in Parshas Va'aschanan, so it mentions by two of the Lukos, Kasher Tzivisicha, as I have already commanded you. That it says, Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha, as Hashem had commanded you. So where did Hashem command them? Where's that coming from? So suggested Torah Tamima, that's the secret, that that these mitzvahs were the ones already commanded at Mara, and they mentioned over the course of giving over the Aseres HaDibros, these are the mitzvahs that you already commanded about a couple of weeks ago when you were in Mara. And the Torah Tamima suggests, and maybe based on that, we can understand the line that's in the Kiddush on Shabbos night. And what is that? That we add in, Shachal v'shasu v'kiddush l'hosif milos, we add in the words, B'yava uvratzon Shabbos kachecha v'yilichu v'yishom v'kacheh shemecha. That we accepted it, B'yava uvratzon, with want, with love and with desire. So why do those mitzvahs specifically do we proclaim B'yava uvratzon? This was the other mitzvahs were given to Har Sinai. What did Har Sinai look like? So at least according to the way the Gemara describes it in one place, Kofan aleim har kegigis, the mountain was raised above them, and they didn't have a choice. The Jews had to accept the Torah. So specifically, that mitzvah, the mitzvah of Shabbos, and the mitzvah of Kivud Av, but we don't say Kiddush on the mitzvah of Kivud Av, but specifically, the mitzvah of Shabbos was given bi'ava uveratzon, in that we accepted it before we were forced to by Kofan Aleim Harkigigis, when the mountain was put above our head, and that's the reference to the idea that Kivud Av, that mitzvah of Shabbos was given at Mara. Okay? So that's step one. Now we have another issue, though, and that is, and the Minchas Asher discussed this several times over the course of the Sefer HaBereishis, but shows up here again, and that is that the Jews weren't Jewish yet. When did the Jews become Jewish? The Jews became Jewish at Har Sinai. That's where the Geirus took place. That's where the last stage of Geirus took place. In fact, when we learn out the mitzvahs that are required for Geirus, so the Gemara in Krisos on Daf Tes, so it quotes the pasuk by Bris Mila, that they had a Bris Mila and they left Mitzrayim. And then before they got the Torah, so there were korbanos that were offered. In order to bring those korbanos, they had to do hazah. They had to sprinkle water onto the people. So what are you talking about hazah? So the Gemara says hazah in hazah below tefillah. This idea of the sprinkling of the water can't happen until you actually have mikvah, right? Part of the paraduma process says you actually go to mikvah. So he says you can't have hazah, you can't have sprinkling without the mikvah. So it must be that they went to the mikvah, but that doesn't happen for another three prakim, two or three prakim when you get into. Parshas Yisro, so what are they at this point? They are considered to be mul velo tavel, that the Jews have gotten their bris milas, but they haven't gone to the mikveh yet. Right? And what's the third thing necessary? There's, I guess, four things necessary to become a ger: mikveh, tevila. What are the other two? Anyone? It's Kabbalah Samitzvos, although it's right. Well, you need part. And the fourth one is. Bris. You said Bris.
Wow. Got to get the paper signed.
Right? You got to get after those Dayanim to get the documentation, right? But besides that, you also have to bring a korban. That's part of the requirements of becoming a ger. Now, that's a little bit of a problem nowadays, but we don't bring korbanos. So the Gemara comments that because the pasuk says uvedoro seichem, as it says that you're going to accept gerim for all your generations. So if there's no beis hamikdash, so how do you bring the korban? So it must be that there's a way of accepting gerim without bringing the korban. In fact, the Gemara says that for a short time after the destruction of the second beis hamikdash, when people converted, how many Jews are pretty harassed people at that point? I'm not sure how many people are actually converting, but the din was that they would put aside money and be makdish it and say this money is for the korban that I'm going to bring when the Beis Hamikdash is going to be rebuilt. But then after a while they realized there's a problem, because now you got this hektish money laying around. That's not a good thing to have laying around, money that is sanctified. So they stopped that. They stopped that gazer. Anyways, so back over here. So the problem is at this point the Jews aren't Jewish yet. So how could they be commanded on Shabbos if they're not Jewish? Especially because the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that a goy sheshavas chayiv misa, that a goy, a non-Jew who keeps the Shabbos is chayiv misa, is liable to death. Now that's what that means is a little unclear. There's a machlokas yishonim as to what that means, but there's an assumption that we're not supposed to, at least on a large scale, be keeping the Shabbos. But when a person's not Jewish yet.
They're not Jewish. That means that Yaakov wasn't Jewish.
So this is why it was discussed several times over the course of Bereishis, that that the implication then is that the Avos weren't Jewish yet. Right?
Is there any other alternative for the
Karbanos?
Like, is there any other specific thing they have to do with place of the
Karbanos? Nowadays?
Yeah.
So we don't. There is a discussion because not everybody is necessarily in agreement that you can't bring Karbanos to Zmanazah. There is a discussion amongst the Rishon about the possibility of bringing Karbanos. So what do you mean I can't bring Karbanos? I could. Yeah. It just happens to be that there's a mosque there, right? Or the Israeli police won't let me up there, but I could. So there is a discussion about that. But our assumptions are that Geirim are fully Jewish, even in the absence of bringing a korban. With regards to Bruce's point, that wait a second, the Jews aren't. You know, how could it be that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov weren't Jewish? So that is discussed explicitly with regards to probably the most prominent case. It only came towards the end of last year. You missed our several discussions about this earlier in the year. But the with regards to Yosef and his brothers, so the Medrash suggests that was their dispute. You've probably heard this before. Right? This was their dispute. And we passed them like Yosef. That for Yosef was the one that was saying that you weren't Jewish, therefore you're not allowed to eat the animal. And that's... You know, so that possibility is that at that point they were a tribe. They were trying to maintain the marriages within the family. They were the Yaakov tribe, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov tribe, as opposed to being halachically Jews. What? Right, now they did keep the mitzvos, but what does that mean that they kept the mitzvos? So either they kept all of them, or they kept them as an eno mitzvah va'osa, or they kept them at specific time. Those are shared from last year. Check the tapes. You can find them all online. So anyways, so what do we do about this situation here? So there are, he quotes here from the Or Zarua, they didn't actually give them the mitzvos of Shabbos. And here is the four-volume Feldheim Riviat 39 Malachos book. That was not given to the Jewish people. They were given the concept of Shabbos. Or as he quotes from the Chassam Sofer here, they were given the concept that we rest on Shabbos. That today's going to be a day of rest. Now there is actually a Gemara that raises the issue that it seems based on the chronology of their travels, as described in the Gemara, that they traveled on Shabbos, that they left Mara on Shabbos. So that seems like it should be a violation of Shabbos as well. So the Gemara there actually answers, well, they were given the mitzvahs of Shabbos, they weren't given the mitzvahs of Tchumim yet. Okay. So they were given some mitzvahs, and they weren't given others. But even those they were given weren't necessarily as strictures with regards to Shabbos. Now, the truth is that does leave you with a little bit of a problem still, and that is, what does it mean, Goy Sheshavas Chayim Misa? What's that Gemara really referring to? So the Gemara seems to be talking about people who take the day as a day of rest. That seems to be what the Gemara really means. That we don't want, the Gemara is not so interested in non-Jews studying Rabbi Ribiat's four volume set in order to ensure that they are violating a malacha every Shabbos. That's not what they're looking to. We don't want them taking the day off. We want them working. We don't want that. That seems to be the, so. Just teaching them the concept of Shavuos already seems to be perhaps a bit problematic against that. Okay, there was a very famous. So that is the issue. The other issue possibly is that because they're already a ger shemal velotavel, because they already reached that state, perhaps they already are entitled, or perhaps even required, in order to keep the Shabbos. That no, they already are partly Jewish, and that already alleviates from them the issues of Goyish Shabbos Chayav Misa, that a non-Jew who keeps the Shabbos is liable to death. And he quotes here from, it is a Medrash in Devarim, where it says, Akum Sheshomer Shabbos at Shelo Kibel Alav Lamel Chayav Misa, that a non-Jew who keeps the Shabbos before they've accepted the Bris Mila upon themselves, meaning before they've accepted the idea. Yeah, got it. It's with my cement shoes, you know.
I think those shoes are, you gotta have to buy another pair. If you look at the
models,
they're not getting that off.
Oh gosh, you're... Yeah. Alright. For mitzvahs. So anyways, so that's what they mean. So what does that then tell us? That somebody who is doing it in order to become Jewish, or either they've already had their bris, or they've already perhaps even on the way of becoming Jewish, so then they're exempt from this prohibition of Goyish Shabbos Chayav Misa. And my understanding, the Gerim that I've sponsored throughout my Rebbeinu, I've never been machbid on them. I've never told them, oh, you have to violate the Shabbos. I believe most assume that we don't give those instructions to violate Shabbos. The prohibition is doing it on their own. That, oh, we're going to have a day of rest for us. But if you're doing it as a way of becoming Jewish towards Shabbos, towards an idea of Shmir Shabbos, so I believe the minhag today is to people that are in the process of becoming Gerim to have them observe the Shabbos. Usher Weiss Paskins, I believe that is the standard psak. But let's go back to the year, not 1948, but 1848. If you go, I want to go back to the year 1848 in Yerushalayim Yer HaKadosh. What?
After the year Germany Revolution.
In 1848, there was a German Revolution. Okay, maybe this is what caused it. All right, so let's go back to the year 1848. There's something happened in Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh. There was a person who was not Jewish. He's the 23rd Adar Beis. It was a leap year. Okay, so there was a non-Jew. I'm reading here from Rabbi Bleich, recounts the story here in Contemporary Halachic Problems, Volume 4, page 146. So there was a Moroccan immigrant who was becoming a ger, and he had gotten his bris mila. The problem is the incision. Imagine this in 1848, getting a bris mila. An adult. Okay, so he had his bris mila, and it wasn't healing as fast as he wanted. So there was still, it was still bleeding or something, and they weren't ready to go to the mikveh yet, because that would then be considered a chatzitza, or maybe just not safe. But he didn't go to the mikveh yet, and now it's comes Shabbos. Uh-huh. So he's not feeling so well over the course of Shabbos, and the people go to him and tell him, you should take some medicine because you're not feeling so well. He said, Chas v'shalom, it's my first Shabbos. It's my first Shabbos, and it's an Isser of Refuah on Shabbos. I'm not taking any medicine on Shabbos. They tell him, what do you mean you're not taking any medicine on Shabbos? Right? If you're not feeling well, if you are a chola she'ein bo sakana, which you are, so you should be taking medicine on Shabbos. No! Not taking medicine on Shabbos. So they say, all right, well, we're going to go to the rabbi then and tell on you. So they go to the rabbi's house. The rabbi at that time was Rav Shmuel Salant. Rav Shmuel Salant, you realize this is 1848. Rav Shmuel Salant, I don't believe, passed away until the 1900s. He was the Rav of Yerushalayim for over 60 years. I think I've told this story before. Rav Cook's father-in-law, the way Rav Cook ended up in Israel, I believe his father-in-law, I think his father-in-law came here first. His father-in-law was the Adaret, was the Rav of Panovich. Accepted that he saw Rav Shmuel Salant is getting older. He's in his 80s. He needs an assistant rabbi. So we'll hire the Aderet Rav Rabinowitz Tumim was his name. I don't remember the first. Avram Aderet, whatever his name was. Avram Rabinowitz Tumim. We're going to hire him, and he'll be the assistant rabbi, and he'll be in training until Rav Shmuel Salant passes away, and then he'll take over the job, and it'll be fine. So the problem is Rav Shmuel Salant lives to be well into his 90s, I think to 98, lives to be well into his 90s, and the Aderet predeceased him. Actually died before him. So on the kever of the, on the Aderet's kever, in, I believe it's on Har HaZeisim, on his kever it says, Shenimnu Lios Rav Yerushalayim, that he was chosen to become the Rav of Yerushalayim. Never actually became, but anyways, this is even before he showed up. So they knock on Shmuel Salant's door, and there's no answer. Why is there no answer? Because Shmuel Salant is off in Europe. What's he doing in Europe? What's any Rav from Israel doing in Europe?
Raising money.
Yeah, so the Shmuel Salant's not around. So they can't go to the Shmuel Salant. So instead they go to the Av, or one of the members of the Beis Din, someone by the name of Rav Asher Lemel. So they knock on his door. They tell him the situation. Rav Asher Lemel says, oh, wait a second, he doesn't even want to take medicine. That okay. Medicine is the least of the problems. He's not even allowed to keep Shabbos at all. He's got to do a malach. He's not Jewish yet. He's a ger shemul velo tavel, which means that he's not Jewish. So therefore, he is chayiv. He is chayiv to do a malacha on Shabbos. So the story goes that they went to him and he, you know, they said, you know, you're not Jewish yet, and therefore you're mechuyev to be mechayel Shabbos. To which he says, I don't understand. I've been keeping Shabbos for the last 4 years while I've been in training. Well, nobody thought of it. You got to violate Shabbos. You're not technically Jewish yet. So there's machlokas as to what exactly happened. Either he wrote several letters on a piece of paper, or according to another version of the story, he signed his name in the vernacular. I'm not sure what the distinction is, but this then unleashed a firestorm, because on the morrow, a furor erupted in the city. The Sephardic as well as the Ashkenazic scholars of the city contended that requiring a candidate for conversion who has already been circumcised and who had accepted the yoke of commandments to desecrate the Sabbath was entirely without precedent. And upon his return to Yerushalayim, Rav Shmuel Salant sided with those scholars. So Rav Asher Lemel felt compelled to author a lengthy exposition in defense of his controversial ruling. That material was later published in a book, Shomer Tzion HaNeman, a rabbinic journal edited by Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. Now Rav Yaakov Ettlinger is a very important figure. Who's Rav Yaakov Ettlinger? Rav Yaakov Ettlinger lives in Germany. He's the Rav of Germany. He was the Rebbe of Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch. So he's also the author of a sefer called Aruch Lener. He has a bunch of very important tshuvos, but running out of time, so we're not going to give too much more background on him. But if this is getting to his journal, well, guess what? This machlokas now erupts in Europe. So the way Rabbi Bleich begins with articles, his article. Where was it?
Just take the damn medicine already.
What?
Did he have to take the medicine or not?
It's unclear whether he took the medicine. We just know he violated Malacha D'Oraisa.
Say, take the medicine, and then you're covered, baby.
Here, the he says in the way he begins his article here is, in the history of rabbinic scholarship there have been occasions upon which questions have been posed that seemingly are unlikely to arise on future occasions with any degree of frequency, but that nevertheless have sparked controversies that reverberate in the annals of halacha. This case, this guy, this Moroccan guy who showed up in Yerushalayim and wanted to convert, this became a huge machlokas, and apparently it was there's a kollel in Detroit that collected everything and put out a volume on this a little while ago, and that's why Rabbi Leif is talking about in this book. Yes, fast. Does he need to actually talk about this?
Assuming he was Muslim. A Muslim said it.
Why do you? No.
What?
I don't know if
Morocco wants to right?
Well, what's the difference?
No, I thought he may have it started that. He may have had a bris earlier. But
well, apparently he didn't.
Okay.
He was a reform Muslim. apparently he didn't.
Secondly, you have to realize, according to Islam law, they're not as maker as we are about breaking it. You die. You break the law or die. You can't take blood. We can eat pork if it's going to save our life. They can't. By most of the law.
Okay.
So maybe he took...
I'm not making any assumptions. It's hard. No, you see that bizman as that. You tell somebody you need to eat on Yom Kippur. They look at you like you're crazy. I can't eat on Yom Kippur. What do you mean? You have to. The doctor said you have to eat.
Right.
You take your medication, otherwise it's very dangerous. I'm not eating on Yom Kippur. Right? That's normal. That's normal. I've had these discussions with people. These are common things that come up. I'm not doing it. There are a couple of mitzvos that are out there. Refuah is one of them, although perhaps not as prominent. Other issues that come up on Shabbos, that no, you have to go to a doctor. I'm not going to a doctor. I don't drive on Shabbos. I'm not going to a doctor. But you have to. It's dangerous. I'm not doing it. These come up. It's not right, but that's certainly part of our that's part of the story.
Right.
It's part of the story. Okay, so anyway, so many took us. So again, this Rav Asher Lemel paskined that he needs to do malach on Shabbos, and then he wrote an article defending himself, which was based on that Gemara in Sanhedrin. Listen, the guy's not Jewish. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says goy shabbos chayiv misa. He has nothing to lose. Let him. He has to do malach. How can you tell him not to do? Not to do malacha. So,
you call this guy Kuni Lemo?
I'm still confused.
What?
If the bris wasn't, if he had the bleeding and the bris wasn't, what does that mean? I assume if he had the bleeding, the bris wouldn't actually be a complete bris.
What?
Maybe I'm thinking wrong. I don't know.
No, the bris is you remove the foreskin. That's what you do as part of the bris. And then there's blood that comes after. This is, I happen to know somebody who... I know somebody, I had a congregant who, not here, who was a ger, a full ger, who got a bris at the, he was a Mormon. So he never was circumcised, and he actually had a bris as an adult. Not in Yerushalayim in 1848, but even today. And he So the Binyan Sion, who is the editor of this journal, wrote his own tshuva on the matter. That tshuva is published as well. I assume it's the same tshuva. He has a tshuva about this that's published in his Sefer Binyan Sion, where he says that, well, wait a second, why are you so sure that a ger shemol velo tavol, which is what this guy is, shouldn't keep the Shabbos? Isn't that what the Jews were at Mara? Right? The Jews were gerit tzedek at Mara, and therefore they should be... And therefore, he should be in the same levels. Just as the Jews were able to keep Shabbos, so too this fellow should also be able to keep Shabbos. Now, Rav Asher Weiss, in his discussion here, continues on and says, now, you have to be careful with how far you take that parallel. Because if you're going to say that the Jews at Mara have the din of a ger shemo v'lo tavol, well, guess what that means? Then doesn't it just mean you could keep the Shabbos? That means you have to keep the Shabbos, right? So you have to say, well, it's a little different. I mean, there, that was Horas Shah that was specifically told to them. But it's difficult to say that you have to keep the Shabbos as somebody who has the status of a Ger Shemal V'Lotavol. However, that is actually what Rav Shmuel Salant held. Rav Shmuel Salant, again, he's the one who came back to town and was very upset that Rav Asher Lemel had offered this shot. So he suggested that, yeah, he is actually chayiv to keep the Shabbos. He bases it on a Rashba here. Yeah, a comment that the Rashba makes, that there's a Gemara in Yevamos where that Rabbi Akiva convert who is a ger shemo v'lo tavol is not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. And how do we know that he's not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach? So it's based on Psukim. He figures out, well, he's not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. Oh, because he's not a... One second. You're not allowed, but only because of a specific pasuk excluding from doing the Korban Pesach. So Rashba says, wait a second. If he's not Jewish, why do you need a special pasuk excluding him from eating the Korban Pesach? Right? He should be excluded. Anyways, so he suggests that maybe that means that somebody who is a ger shemo v'lo tavol perhaps does have a status of being Jewish, and not only that, Rav Shmuel Salant further suggests, although Rabbi Bleich writes without any specific evidence, that a ger shemo v'lo tavol once he goes to the mikvah, he's retroactively considered Jewish back to when he went to the mikvah. Now, that actually solves a problem for me, because it came up in the Daf Yomi recently, that there was a certain Amora in Bava Metzia that he's known by his mother's name, Rabba Bar Bar Chana. So why is he called Rabba Bar... Was it Rabba Bar Bar Chana? Maybe it was someone else, but something along the similar lane. So why is he known by his... That's his grandmother. I think there's someone else. There's someone who's known by his mother. So why is he known by his mother and not by his father? So Rashi says because because the mother was taken captive and she was raped by somebody, or raped or seduced, whatever it is, and therefore the person, his father, wasn't Jewish. However, Rashi then says, but that person who had bia with this woman, he converted, so therefore, and Rashi even adds in, before this child was born, so therefore it was considered a case of horesa shelo b'kedusha. No, that wouldn't be that case. I don't have it in front of me. What? No, the father converted. I mean, the mother was Jewish all along, and the father converted. Rashi says before the child was born, but the conception was from a man who wasn't Jewish at the time that he conceived it. Right. So therefore, it's. Why did I start talking about that?
Because.
You got it. Give me a space.
Oh, it was Rashi claims that I was trying to figure out why Rashi would want to say that. Oh, he converted before the baby was born. Why does he have to say that? So maybe it has something to do along these lines. The truth is, now I think about it, I'm not sure what difference that makes. Right, anyway, so that is suggested by Rosh Molzant, that therefore it could perhaps be a requirement. And then most assume that falls someplace in the middle. Rav Yaakov Etzlinger himself falls in the middle and saying that no, he's not obligated to Kishai, he's not Jewish, but he's not included in the prohibition. Now that tshuva never goes the next step of, oh, what about a person who's on the road to conversion, right? Does that person have any status that perhaps exempts them from this prohibition of keeping the Shabbos? So I would so Rav Asher Weiss says yes. Many suggest that it's okay because he's doing it in order to be Jewish as opposed to create one's own religion. I would conclude with the following shot. There is a major issue. A major issue in terms of the world of Geirus, of technically you are not allowed to have non-Jews over at a meal on Yontif. Right, the Gemara says Shema that we're concerned that you're not allowed to cook for a non-Jew on Yontif. You're only allowed to cook for Jews, and if you're going to have a non-Jew over, so we're concerned that you're going to cook extra because a non-Jew is coming over. So therefore, you're not allowed to have a non-Jewish guest at your home on Shabbos. On Yontif. Shabbos is okay. Yontif is a problem. So that is a big, big problem. Right, if somebody is going through a year-long conversion process, so that's a big part of the chinuch is going to people's houses specifically on Yontif or for a Seder, things like that. So how do you alleviate that problem? So there are various eitzas, our various suggestions. Has to get out of that problem. What?
So they can't bring their own food.
Well, one suggestion is actually to sell them the food before Shabbos.
Okay.
They say, therefore, it's their food. Therefore, you're giving them their food. Before Yontif. That's one of the suggestions that are out there. There are other suggestions that are out there as well. But there is a certain well-known posek who I called about this question once, because I was told to call him. He has an interesting position. And he told me that such a person isn't included in the takana. This person is not included in the violation. Why not? Because he quoted me that there's a Minchas Elazar, which is written by the Munkat Rav, that talks about a case of a woman who's on her way to the mikvah. Now, a woman on her way to the mikvah is, by definition, not a Malshul Tavl, right? She didn't have a bris, obviously. So she's nothing until she goes to the mikvah. But she was on her way to the mikvah, and she died on the way to the mikvah in order to convert. She died on the mikvah on the way to convert. So the question is, where do we bury her? So the Minchas Elazar Paskind suggested that she could be buried in a Jewish cemetery, but she's already considered Amcha. She's already on her way to the Mikvah, right? She's already considered one of us, as opposed to one of them. Now, so therefore, you can say the same thing here. If somebody is on their way to conversion, so they're considered one of us, as opposed to one of them, and therefore, you're allowed to cook for them over the course of Yontif. Now, that is a big, big chiddush. First of all, it's a big chiddush what the Minchas Elazar said. Second of all, I tracked down this Minchas Elazar. He doesn't actually Paskin that Lamaisa. He's suggesting it as part of a discussion of something else. He says, why? Maybe you could say the following. And then the third thing to extend it to this as well is taking it even a step further, which is not, I'm not prepared to do, but this posting certainly has the shoulders broad enough to be able to make such a... So that is some of the issue with regards to, and you can trace it back to this discussion about what exactly was the Jews doing when they were at Mar. Were they Jewish? Were they not Jewish? Whatever status they were at. So what did that mean with regards to their Shvir Shabbos, which you know was commanded then, as is told to us, especially in the Gemara and alluded to in the Pesukim in Peshach. Okay, I'll stop here. And we have another shiur in 20 minutes. Yes.